Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short.
Patriots
even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Actually, no. John is not here on Patriots Playbook today. John is somewhere, probably lost, in the mountains of West Virginia. He's doing his normal duties for ESPN Radio. The game of the week that he broadcasts for college football happens to be on Thursday this week. I think it's Mountaineers and Auburn.
I don't know, but he's leaving you in the lurch. That's terrible.
Well, that's okay. You know, like I said, he's probably lost. He probably won't even make the game in time because they don't even have cell phone towers out there. He couldn't even call into the show. So, Eric Scalavino here from Patriots Football Weekly. I normally join John on Thursdays, but today I got the whole place to myself, all of my other colleagues.
And everybody loves you on this show, all the emails.
That's what I've heard. I'm trying to look through the emails now, and we welcome your emails, of course, because there's plenty to talk about with the Patriots this week. Webradio at patriots.com, the email address. And if you feel like calling in, 508-543-7482 is our number. That other voice you heard was our marvelous producer, Gary Gradecki, behind the glass.
Marvelous, just because you need me to talk to you.
No, come on. You do a great job. Everybody says so. Everybody that I know says so. But like I said, plenty to talk about today involving the Patriots, more than probably we'd like to because not all of that news is good. Let's start with the good, though. They, coming off the 41-7 win over Denver, was a nice way to bounce back from losing that atrocious game in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. But it was a game in which they suffered some losses, too, the Patriots. Notably, Rodney Harrison going out with the quad tear separation, whatever it is exactly that they want to call it. He's done for the year. A lot of people questioning whether or not his career is over. And that's not good news for if you're a Patriots fan. Losing Tom Brady in week one, the leader of the offense, and in many respects now losing the leader of the defense, the heart and soul, maybe at least, in Rodney Harrison. The other good news from that game, Sammy Morris filling in for the recently placed on IR Lawrence Maroney, having 134 or so rushing yards in the first half of that game, but then not coming back in the second half and due to an injury, and we never saw him again in that game. There's, you know, I wouldn't go out and say that he's going to end up on IR because it looks like he, you know, he may have a chance of coming back from whatever that is. So we're holding out hope for him, but just not good that he has such a great performance and then gets injured. It kind of reminded me of last year when he had the great game against Cincinnati, Sammy Morris, and then was having a great game in Dallas and filling in for Maroney, and then he got hurt in the Dallas game and then ended his season. But again, I think I'm a little bit more hopeful that he's going to come back. Maybe not this week necessarily, but I think we'll see Sammy Morris again before the year is out. And then obviously, you know, Maroney going on IR is even more of a pressing issue with not just Morris is getting hurt, but Lamont Jordan hasn't been in the lineup for the last few weeks. But again, Bill was a little bit optimistic. Bill Belichick earlier this week when asked about him, he said, yeah, he's day to day, but he didn't say it in a way that, you know, was a negative. He kind of gave us who were there the impression that Lamont would be soon returning to the lineup, and that's going to be a good thing for the Pats. But I'm troubled. I'm troubled about Maroney and his future with this team. Not just from the injury standpoint, but you know this was going to be his third year with the team, and usually by now you know whether or not your running back is NFL caliber.
Lawrence Maroney scores amazingly his first touchdown of the season. Yeah. I say amazingly because this team has now scored a total of 47 touchdowns.
Well, that was a year ago, but, Maroney had...
Are you concerned about Maroney or the Patriots running game?
I'm concerned both about Maroney and the Patriots running game. I'm concerned about him because I think he really is a nice guy. He's a good guy at heart. He's a fun-loving guy. You know, maybe... has some maturity issues that he has to deal with. But, you know, he showed me some flashes last year at the end of the season, having those 400-yard games in the last six games, had a great run near the end. He seemed to be healthy. He seemed to be coming back. He was very positive in this offseason about, you know, wanting to come in and prove himself this year. And, you know, he had a few minor injuries dinging him up here and there, causing him to miss some time. And then all of a sudden he tries to come back and then gets placed on IR. It's been a roller coaster ride for the poor guy. And I think there's talent there, but I'm just concerned that he's not going to be able to fulfill it. And whether he does here or not, you know, it's not going to happen this year, obviously, for the rest of this year. But, you know, going into year four next year, if he comes back, it just doesn't bode well right now for his future. The other thing that I happen to see on ESPN, right up, we have the screen up above me here. There's a report on ESPN about Tom Brady's surgery. This morning in the Boston Herald, I was reading Karen Garrigan, one of the fine beat reporters who covers this team, had a story about Tom Brady's status and his rehabilitation from his knee surgeries. Now, we all know that he had the surgery earlier this month, and then about a week or so later had follow-up surgery to clean out what was believed to be an infection as a result of that surgery. Now, in Karen's report today, and it's on ESPN right now, Brady has undergone two further procedures after that to try to continue to treat this infection that came as a result of the knee injury. That's four surgeries now in the span of, we're not even through this month.
Dr. Phil loves me.
And, yeah, well, some doctors do, apparently. But now Wendy Nix of ESPN is reporting that the Patriots are not happy with this situation because they had wanted, according to the source that talked to Wendy Nix, they're not happy because they had wanted Brady to have his surgery done by a doctor here in the Boston area.
Dr. Phil.
No, I don't believe, Tom, that Dr. Phil does surgeries. But Tom decided to go to a doctor out on the West Coast with whom he and his family were more comfortable, according, again, to this report, a source that talked to Wendy Nix. And that source told her also that Tom is looking at months and not weeks in terms of getting over this thing. I would assume, obviously, with a knee injury, it's going to take months. But I guess from what this quote is saying, it sounds like the recovery from this most recent cleaning out of the knee could take months. That's what I'm gathering from the way it's worded. It doesn't go on and any further. It's just a little crawl on the bottom of the screen, and that's what the information says, that the source says this is going to take weeks, months, and not weeks for Tom to get over. And I'm assuming they're referring to this most recent procedure. So, you know, you get into the whole issue of whether or not his recovery is going to be set back as far as, you know, being ready in time for next season, and, you know, how well he will be like his old self when he does come back, and how this changes the prognosis for Brady. It's, you know, obviously right now it's hard to tell because we don't really have any more information other than what's being reported by this source through Wendy Nix's story and what Karen Garrigan had in her piece in the Herald today. So the Patriots are 4-2, hosting a Rams team this Sunday that has won two games in a row under interim coach Jim Haslett, who looks like he's trying to vie for the full-time job there as the head man in St. Louis. Patriots coming off an impressive win Monday night over the Broncos. So let's try to focus on the positives. They are 4-2. They're only one game behind the division leading Buffalo Bills, who are 5-1. I suppose things could be a lot worse. You know, Matt Castle in his first year as the starting quarterback, first year since high school that he's had the job on any team, and he's guided them to 4-2, and now they have a chance this weekend, I think a very good chance, to go 5-2. And the Bills play Miami, division opponent, and, you know, division games are should never be taken for granted. So I don't think it's an automatic that Buffalo is going to roll over Miami, especially, you know, the way Miami came in here and New England a few weeks ago and handed it to the Patriots. You know, they have as good a shot as any. So if things go the right way, if the ball bounces the right way, New England could be tied again for first place after this week at 5-2 with Buffalo, if that's the way things shake out. And all in all, given what they've had to suffer through this first half of the 2008 season, I don't think the Pats are in as bad a shape as maybe people might have expected when Tom Brady went down in the first quarter of that game in the opener against Kansas City. What do you think, though? Are you concerned at all about the news about Brady? Are you concerned about Maroney? Are you concerned about Rodney Harrison going out? Are you concerned about Sammy Morris? We haven't even touched on the front seven, which was thought to be the strength of this defense coming into this season. Richard Seymour, of course, talking all offseason about how he was glad to be finally healthy again and that he was looking forward to getting back to that Pro Bowl caliber that he played at a few years ago and, you know, showed some positive signs on Monday night against the Broncos. They got a couple of sacks. Granted, they were later on in the game when it, you know, might have been a foregone conclusion that they were going to win at that point, but still was good to see it nonetheless. But I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see a lot more of that front seven, particularly the front three, getting a nice push, getting like they did in the San Francisco game where they had JT O'Sullivan running around for his life back there. You know, if Jay Cutler doesn't hit his hand on Vince Wilfork's helmet on the first play of the game there on Monday night, you know, is this a different ball game? You know, the Broncos were forced to kind of go to their running game a little bit earlier than they probably wanted to in their game plan because of that injury. And you could tell as soon as it happened that Cutler wasn't going to be the same. He actually left for a little while, as you saw. Patrick Ramsey, the backup, came in, but then Cutler toughed it out, came back in the second half. I think this would have been – it had potential to be a lot different game if Cutler didn't get hurt, because the Pats weren't getting the kind of pressure on him that they were on O'Sullivan a couple of weeks earlier in San Francisco. And that's kind of what I expected of them all year, was that they were going to have Vrabel and Thomas on the outside being able to rush. You know, those are the positions that they're most comfortable in on the outside. You know, AD's played on the inside, so is Vrabel, but – they're playmakers when they're on the outside, and they proved that last year. Vrabel had his best season, 12.5 sacks. Statistically, he had his best season last year. AD came on late after Rosie Colvin got hurt and went out for the year, and they had a chance to move him to the outside. He started wreaking havoc on teams. That's where they're most comfortable, and so far this year, I haven't seen that they've been able to follow up on that. And I'm not sure if it's – I'm going to assume that it's because the scheme, the game plan each week is different. And I think defensive coordinator Dean Pease may have alluded to that in one of his recent press conferences, that, you know, that he was going to let them loose or in the next game or whatever. And they kind of started to see that in the Denver game. But we need to see a lot more of that, because the front seven still is the most talented part of this team. Not taking anything away from the secondary, but they have, you know, they've struggled to be consistent this year. Hard for them not to be. I mean, with the losses they suffered and with the shuffling around that they've had to do, different starters opposite Ellis Hobbs each week. Delph O'Neill's had his struggles. Lewis Sanders has been in there. Very surprised that rookie second-round pick Terrence Wheatley was deactivated for that Monday night game. I really thought, from what we saw of him in training camp, that he was going to be maybe even starting by now opposite Hobbs, or even in Hobbs' spot, and Hobbs would be on the other side, or somebody else would have, you know, O'Neill or somebody else would have stepped up and taken that other corner spot. But it's been, you know, we're going into week eight of the season, almost at the midway point of the NFL, and at least the midway point of the Patriots' schedule, because they had the bye week earlier. So week nine in Indy will be the exact midpoint of their season. But to this point, you know, some surprises, not necessarily good surprises, but devastating injuries. And yet they're still barking at number one. They're still right there in the hunt. They can, like I said earlier, they're 4-2, looking at possibly 5-2 after this week, and if things go the right way, Buffalo losing to Miami this week, or even in the next coming weeks, Buffalo maybe starting to come down to earth a little bit, they could be, you know, they could be right back on top sooner than anyone thinks, or that anyone may have thought after the, after that that first game when Brady went down. But look, losing Harrison, obviously, it's as a fan, you don't want to see that because Rodney's one of the most loved Patriots on this team. I think they have a chance, though, with Merriweather and Sanders to sort of mix things up. Merriweather's leading the team in interceptions right now. You maybe keep him back a little bit and let Sanders do what Harrison, play the role that Harrison kind of had, get him more towards the line of scrimmage, maybe try to get him to make some plays up there the way Harrison kind of did, and let Merriweather kind of stay back. He's got that experience as both a corner and a safety, and, you know, might be better suited to laying back in coverage a little bit. I'm not as concerned from a tactical standpoint about the loss of Harrison, because I think we've seen enough development now out of Merriweather, and I like what I see out of Sanders, that I think they might be able to fill that void on the field. Now, from a leadership standpoint in the locker room or whatever, you're not gonna. It's going to be hard to. It's going to be hard to replace a guy like Harrison. And you know, Adalis Thomas even talked about it yesterday about the leadership that he brings, and he's obviously going to be missed from that point of view. But I don't think they're going to be so bad off on the field without Rodney, because, like I said, I think Merriweather and Sanders, if you mix it up with them the way we just discussed here, I actually like their chances back there. The corner spot is going to be another area where things might need some improvement. Let's just put it that way. But I want to hear what you guys think. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, 508-543-7482. The phone number if you want to call in. Let's start it off in the inbox with Brittany from Mendon. She says, "Hey, boys." She's including you, Gary, I guess, in there because it's just me talking right now. "Did I miss something major? I came back from lunch."
Well, this came in on PFW Progress. They didn't get to this one.
Oh, okay. "I came back from lunch and heard Fred Kirsch saying something about Brady not coming back till 2010. Please tell me I heard wrong. I know he had another surgery, but from what I read on his website, it sounded like he would still be fine for 2009. Yeah, Brittany, I think I would expect Brady to be back by next season. But again, the reports we're just getting today about these third and fourth surgeries that he's had this month and the setbacks, the potential setbacks that these could cause, that could alter the time frame for Brady's recovery. I don't know if that means he'll miss the entire season. Again, it's just too early. We don't have enough information to comment with any certainty on it. But from making an educated guess, I would think that it would still be there'd still be a timetable for Brady to be back by 2009. I didn't hear what Fred said about 2010. Maybe it was just Fred having a Fredism, but. Brittany continues, "On another note, I was curious if you guys heard any of Patriots Friday last week. Someone called and told Dale Holley and Mike Felger that they wanted to talk about football and asked what they thought about the upcoming Pats-Broncos game, and Felger's response was something like, I think I don't care about it. I know the Red Sox had just made a crazy comeback the night before, but seriously, guys, they didn't talk about the Patriots for 5 minutes in the entire time I was listening at work. It's much more entertaining and informative to listen to you guys." Well, we like to think so because that's why we're here. Brittany, thank you. Strippers, next up in line. 59 wins leads a big webmaster pool. The webmaster is in first out of over 300 people. What is he talking about, Gary?
Fred was wondering on the picks contest, has anyone ever been, you know,
oh, perfect?
The best ever?
Oh, well.
And apparently he'd be leading strippers webmaster pool as well.
Okay. All right. Well, picks. Fred is doing ridiculous in the picks this year. With the spread, without the spread, the guy's he's having a ridiculous year. But not making any money off it. Can't. I mean, he doesn't want to get in trouble, of course. But so that's where we are. We got a game against the Rams this weekend. I still like the Pats' chances in this one, too. Obviously, playing at home, coming off a big win. We said St. Louis had a little bit of a resurgence the past 2 weeks since they got rid of Scott Linehan as their head coach and put Jim Haslett, who was defensive coordinator up to that point, in that spot. And they still have some talent on that team. Torrey Holt, Mark Bulger, Steven Jackson, even though he's still a little bit nicked up. They have some playmakers on defense like Leonard Little. But Pats are at home. They have some good momentum coming off this big win against Denver. I think from what I'm seeing out of Castle, I like that he's taking baby steps, but he's making progress. And by that, I'll cite a couple of examples. There was the series where he threw his first touchdown to Moss. I think one of our emailers on PFW referenced this earlier this week. On that first drive where that first touchdown to Moss, there was a play where he was sort of flushed out of the pocket, went to his right side, and tried to find Moss on the right side of the end zone. Champ Bailey came and knocked the ball away just at the last second. But it was one of those plays where Castle had a lot of real estate in front of him and could have easily tucked the ball and kept running with it, maybe try to get a first down. But he thought better of it and tried to get the ball to Moss. And a couple of plays later, he actually did find Moss on a play that was actually very similar, where he was sort of flushed out and was rolling and could have maybe tucked the ball and run with it. But he stuck with it and found the open receiver and made the good play. Now, maybe a couple of weeks ago, he might have, you know, gone with his gut and tried to run with the ball or tried to escape and try to find somewhere else or held onto it a little too long or maybe even just thrown it away. But, you know, little things like that, which can buy you an extra second, half second or two, that's what makes the difference when you're a quarterback at this level. And I think we're starting to see that out of Castle. You know, he's still getting sacked way too many times. He had six in the Monday night game versus Denver, and probably of those, I think you could probably only lay the blame on the offensive line for one, maybe two of them. I think the others were a case of, you know, Castle just getting a little happy feet back there and trying to make something out of nothing. I think, but I think he is making progress, and I think fans should, you know, give him a little bit more leash. We were getting a lot of emails from people, from PFW readers early on about, you know, how concerned they were about the way he was playing. And, you know, again, realizing the guy is now 4-2 after his first six games. That's not too bad a position to be in, especially since, you know, he's been criticized for not having a lot of experience in college and even since he got to the pros, constantly being behind Brady. But, you know, he's getting in the game and he's leading them to wins. You know, the two losses they had were devastating losses, and there were blowouts. But I'm seeing enough improvement out of him week to week that I'm getting less and less concerned about Castle leading this team. Maybe not all the way to the Super Bowl, but I think at least to the playoffs and maybe, you know, one or two games into that. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if he can go all the way, because the NFL this year is not it's not a dominant league. There are not very many dominant teams. You look at Indianapolis as having a horrible year. The dominant team in the AFC East, record-wise right now, is Tennessee, unbeaten at 6-0. Nobody expected that coming into this year. I'm predicting they lose this Monday night to Indianapolis, too. Tough division game on a Monday night. You know, they're 6-0. They're not going to go 16-0, so I'm picking them in what's a nominal upset this week because the Titans are favored by four. But, you know, the Steelers are 5-1. Tennessee's 6-0. Buffalo's 5-1. And out west, the Broncos at 4-3 are leading that division with San Diego at 3-4 right behind them. You know, yeah, sure, San Diego had a good game against New England a couple of weeks ago, but they're a Jekyll and Hyde team. 1 week they're putting up 30-some points beating the Patriots. The next week they're getting thumped. The week before that, they're just way too inconsistent, and there's just not a dominant team. So if there was ever a year for all of these bad things to befall the Patriots, losing Brady, losing Maroney, losing Harrison, you almost have to say this is the year for it to happen, because there's really not a team out there that's a clear-cut dominant team. Like last year, you had Indy and New England were clearly the cream of the crop in the AFC, and everyone was going through them. I don't see that this year. I mean, right now, sure, the records are showing, like we said, 5-1 for Pittsburgh, 6-0 for Tennessee, but I have a hard time believing that the road to the Super Bowl is going to go through either one of those two cities. I think by the end of the year, I think it'll even out. And, the bye week, the two bye weeks are up for grabs, I think. We're getting to that point, though, where things are starting. We're going to start to get to see this playoff picture start to come into a little bit more focus. Again, webradio@patriots.com, the email address, the phone number, 508-543-7482. Let's get back to the inbox here. It's Todd from Nova Scotia. How does St. Louis win this game? On the surface, I'd say they can't. Bill Belichick has been good at taking one part of an opponent's game away. St. Louis offense is basically all Steven Jackson. Sounds weird, but if St. Louis is going to win, it will be up to rookie deep threat Donnie Avery. And then he continues, where would you rate Castle among active QBs? I'd say top half. That's a good question, Todd.
Did you see the subject line in his first email? I can't believe those PFW writing sons of bees left you alone.
Todd's really come around. You know that? Todd has really grown.
He's taking care of you.
He is. He's got my back. I appreciate that. I appreciate it a lot, Todd. Let's start with how St. Louis can win this game. You know, you hate to go with the cliche of any given Sunday, but as we've seen in this league this year, it is that way more than ever. Any given Sunday, it could happen. I don't see it happening this week. But how could it happen? You know, Castle could take a few steps back. He throw an interception or two at the wrong time. He could get a costly sack. And costly, I mean, you know, at the wrong time, down distance if they're in the red zone or, if you know, on a critical third down. If he's not moving the ball, and St. Louis's defense can take advantage of turnovers, I think that's their biggest opportunity to make some to take advantage and to score points in this game is to get turnovers off of New England's offense. I don't think on their own they're going to be able to do that, and they're going to need to do it in Patriots territory most likely, because I think Paul Perillo mentioned earlier on PFW in Progress about the inconsistency that St. Louis has had on their offensive line this year, shuffling the starting lineup. I think this is a perfect opportunity for the front seven of New England's defense to get the kind of pressure on opposing quarterbacks that we thought all season long we were going to see from them. Now, Todd's question was, how does St. Louis win this game? Again, I think it all is going to come down to turnovers, forcing New England turnovers. And, the way Castle's been playing and the way the offense has been under his leadership, which has been steady and effective, if not overly spectacular at times, save for Monday night against the Broncos, this team isn't making a lot of mistakes in the way of turnovers. The sack number, yes, a little bit too high. Going for a record, actually, I think, on this pace. But I don't think the deer in the headlights look is what we're going to see from Castle anymore. He's growing into the role, and I think he's doing well that way. So, the only hope I think St. Louis has of winning this game, I'll say it again, Todd, is enforcing turnovers. Where would I rate him among active QBs? That's a really good question. Let's go. I'll have to swallow my pride and go with Roethlisberger near the top. I still think Manning is among the best. His team is having a bad year, of course. But I'd say Manning, Roethlisberger, probably near your top two. I would have
Rivers.
Said, I was going to say Rivers. He's a little inconsistent. His team has been inconsistent. I'd like to get some thoughts, though, from Russell Baxter, our friend from ESPN, who I think is on the line with us a little bit earlier than usual today. Russell, how you doing, my friend?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good.
Mr. Rook abandoned you this week, huh?
I need a drink. I need some water or something because I've been talking my head off for the past 40 minutes. What do you think? Todd from Nova Scotia wrote in, where would we rate Castle among active QBs in this point? He's putting him in the top half of the league. As I'm going through the list, I think I'm going to have to agree with him. What do you think?
Well, that's tough because five games is hard to even get a gauge yet. You know, it's amazing how good a quarterback can look, any quarterback, when you put together the running game that the Patriots did Monday night. I mean, that was a big part of it. When you're able to run like that, you're able to play action pass. You can dictate tempo. You hang on to the ball. I mean, Denver didn't do themselves any favors, turn it over five times, but you know, New England, I think that's the first time in the Belichick era that they've run for that many yards. I mean, we're going back, what, early 90s as far as a running game in terms of yards for them? Mm-hmm. You know, they really put it all together. And when you don't have that running game, even the Brett Favres and the Peyton Mannings and the Tom Bradys, depending on how your offense is structured. Now, last year, the Patriots did something totally different. But eventually, with no balance, we saw what happened in the Super Bowl. They really had no running game to fall back on, and so on. So eventually we'll come back and bite you in the you-know-what.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. I'm one of those people, I don't want my quarterback to carry my team. I want my quarterback to be a vital part of that team and be the guy who commands the team. But, you know, we have seen throughout history that, you know, the quarterbacks who have put up the most touchdown passes there have been – five times that a quarterback has thrown 40 or more touchdown passes in a season, Eric. Okay?
And
Tom Brady threw 50 and lost the Super Bowl.
Right.
Peyton Manning threw 49 and lost in the divisional playoffs at New England by scoring a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Marino lost the Super Bowl with 48. Dan Marino didn't even make the playoffs when he threw 44. And, of course, the only person is Kurt Warner, who threw 41 in 1999. They won the Super Bowl. They're the anomaly. Same thing with the highest scoring teams of all time. 589 by the Patriots last year.
Yep.
Lost the Super Bowl. 556 by the Vikings in 1998.
Yep. Lost the NFC
didn't
title game.
Didn't even get to the Super Bowl.
Right.
541 by the Redskins. Lost the Super Bowl by 29 to the L.A. Raiders, when the Raiders used to be good once upon a time. So
they scored that many points that season?
541.
Wow. I don't think of that Redskins team as that. Wow.
That was the record until the Vikings broke it in 1998.
That's weird because when I think of just, this is me personally, when I think of high-scoring offenses, that Redskin team never comes to mind.
No, but I mean, listen, they scored the 541 in the regular season. They then played the Rams in the divisional playoffs and put 51 on the board against them. Mm-hmm. Then held on for dear life, and some people will say controversially, against the 49ers in the NFC title game 24-21. Yep. And then they've got a field goal and a touchdown and a missed extra point and got squeaked out by the Raiders 38-9.
That was a Theismann offense, right?
Yeah, yes it was.
Theismann and
Art Monk. Charlie Brown.
Yep.
John Riggins.
Mm-hmm.
The original Hogs.
Who was the tight end on that team?
Let's see. I want to say Didier was there. I think Don Warren was there.
Okay, wow.
I want to say Rick Walker was there. I might be misspeaking on a couple of those, but I don't think all of them.
Boy, some good talent.
Very talented football team.
That's, wow. Yeah, I should probably start thinking of them more when I think of high-scoring offense.
Well, I think, you know, what I think happens is you know, because, the Redskins were an interesting – never really a dynasty, but you know when the 49ers weren't winning those Super Bowls in the 80s and the 90s, it was the Redskins that were.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was 83.
You forget they won the one Super Bowl during a strike year when you only played nine games.
Yeah.
Then they got to the Super Bowl the following year, kind of proved it wasn't a fluke. But then
right.
They got back in 87.
Yep.
And then by 87, you had Gary Clark and Ricky Sanders were there,
mm-hmm.
who were USFL guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so their offense kind of changed a little. I mean, you know, and then in 91, of course, you had Monk and Sanders and Clark, and the backfield had changed with, Ernest Byner, Gerald Riggs was the goal line guy, and so on. And
Timmy
they
Smith,
were a little more. Matt Millen was a linebacker on that team, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Didn't play in the Super Bowl because he's hurt, but he was a member of that team. So,
Timmy Smith was in the backfield for that 87.
Timmy
team.
Smith, yes.
Had that. It was the one game wonder. We had
yeah,
like 204
yards still is the Super Bowl record, and by about middle of September the following year he
right.
was cut.
So, Russell, curious about your thoughts about New England's win Monday night. Obviously it was on ESPN, Monday Night Football. Numbers-wise, 41-7 looks very impressive. But of course, they had the injuries that mounted in that game. What were your thoughts overall on how New England looked versus playing a really struggling Broncos team?
Well, I think you know when you go back to when Brady was hurt, okay, and then they got ready to play the Jets. I think this was the kind of game plan, not necessarily the score, Eric, that you envisioned when they played the Jets in Week 2.
A lot of running, not much
right,
throwing.
Right, exactly. The more of the 0-4 Patriots, mm-hmm. which were the most balanced team of the Super Bowl teams,
mm-hmm.
With Corey Dillon. I mean, their play calling that year in terms of run plays and pass plays was almost identical
mm-hmm.
and stuff. I mean, you know, again, last year was a different style of offense for them, and it was the kind of offense that Bill Belichick, by my own guess and not conversation with him, finally felt comfortable enough to show you how great Tom Brady was, comfortable enough to let him run that style of offense. Of course, it also took 6 or 7 years to put that style of offense and that control of that offense as well. So
And also to get some of that talent around him.
Absolutely. I mean, Randy Moss being there was big, Wes Welker being there. But, I mean, they kind of built toward that. That was the only thing, always thing I always marveled about the Patriots during this run. Is their four Super Bowl teams, three winning teams, all different types of football teams, you know? And
yep.
you could never, yep. I mean, one week you could run 25 times in a row, 1 week you could pass 25 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
They always kept off balance with what they were going to do.
And obviously we never had what we saw last year. They never had that before.
No,
hardly any
not.
Team. No other team has ever had that, really, except for
that's exactly
a couple.
Right. But unfortunately, when you run the style of offense they run last year, and it happened to the other teams we mentioned, you know, it can take your toll on its defense, just for the simple fact that by scoring so fast, and you know, you combine the fact that this was like kind of a veteran defense for the New England Patriots. You know, it eventually
mm-hmm.
listen. It wasn't like they played awful in the Super Bowl or anything. It's just like the little things that it always. The Patriots had always done well in the Super Bowls and stuff. They just come back and bit them a little and so on, like a kickoff out of bounds, even though it didn't mean anything. When they won the Super Bowl, that was one of the key plays of the game when they beat Carolina.
Yes, that's right.
But to see Gostkowski right. kick the ball out of bounds after the Patriots scored in the first quarter,
mm-hmm.
it wound up meaning nothing.
Right.
But it also told you maybe by game's end, the things were a little out of kilter
yeah.
and, like you said, uncharacteristic
right.
and stuff. But the style of football that they played Monday night, and I don't care who that's against, but, you know, when you run the ball with that type of commitment, that's the one game plan that is portable and works just about everywhere.
But now you factor this in. Denver's rush defense was atrocious.
Absolutely. Poor, to say the least.
Atrocious. Sammy Morris runs like gangbusters in the first half, but doesn't even come out to the field for the second half. So you're forced to go. They're forced to change the game plan at that point. You've got the rookie Ben Jarvis Green Ellis and Kevin Falk sort of balancing the load for the rest of the way. From what we've seen on the injury reports or the participation reports, as they're called, I still am old school that way, Russell.
No, that's okay. I do the same
report.
Thing. Doesn't make you old school. Makes you a creature of habit.
I believe. Yesterday, I think Lamont Jordan, who has missed some time the last few weeks, was still listed on there but had full participation in practice, which is a great sign.
Right.
I can't remember now offhand, but Sammy Morris was on that list too, and I think he had full participation as well, but I'm not going to say that with 100% certainty. But all of a sudden, like before the game, Lawrence Maroney, we find out, gets put on IR.
Mm-hmm.
So we know we don't have him for the rest of the season. Like what we saw out of Sammy Morris, obviously when he was playing, we liked what we saw out of Lamont Jordan. The problem now is, are these guys healthy enough? Can they do this for the rest of the season? Will Castle have the luxury of handing off to these guys and doing what you said, basically managing a game, letting them run it and not throw it as much? Are we going to see that? That's kind of the
question.
Well,
yeah, that's kind
of
the X factor now. I know I'm totally on board with you. And I think depending on who the back is, I think that's you know, I'll give you a good example. We talked about Carolina a few minutes ago in a different vein.
Mm-hmm.
But if you noticed over the years Carolina got to the Super Bowl, and even in the years that they have contended, even to a degree this year and so on, they've always had very solid backs. Okay, Steven Davis had a monster year the year they
sure.
went to the Super Bowl
yep.
and so on, got hurt, wound up getting hurt later.
Yep.
Deshaun Foster, D'Angelo, and so on. But more than anything else, it's a mindset. And John Fox has always been a team with that offensive line. I think more than anything else, you learned the other night that when push came to shove, the New England Patriots could shove people
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily have to push them. And, you know, changing your game plan in midstream or midseason, especially as successful as they were last year, is very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
But if the New England Patriots offensive line, run blocking wise, you know, and I know, listen, I know Matt Castle's been sacked a lot, and I chalk that up, I think, more to a little of his hesitancy and inexperience more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know they only gave up 21 sacks last year. They've already given up 26.
Yep.
But you come out and play the kind of football with that run determination that the Patriots played Monday,
mm-hmm.
That's just – that is success. That's
yeah.
going to be success.
Yeah.
And in some regards, I don't want to say it doesn't matter who the back is, but to a degree, it may not. Now, you know, the stable backs you're talking about, Lawrence Maroney,
mm-hmm.
who obviously is not coming back, Morris hurt, Lamont Jordan, you know, banged up as well. So it might be a rookie, but rookie backs have flourished,
mm-hmm.
okay? I mean, we got two rookie running backs right now, Chris Johnson in Tennessee.
Yep, having a great year.
And Matt Forte in Chicago, who are in
mm-hmm.
the top 10 in the league in rushing yards.
Yep.
So I think, to me, it more determines game plan and offensive line than necessarily who the back is.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point you bring up. I think I can't remember if it was on this show or on our other show, PFW in Progress, but maybe a month or so ago, we tossed around the topic of if you're a running back in this league, you're either good right away and you can tell, or you're not. So
right.
that's sort of like, you know, if you're going to be a good running back in this league, you kind of know right away. Almost as a rookie or a second-year guy, you kind of know. Even if you're sharing time or coming off the bench or whatever, you can kind of see that in most cases. And that was sort of the argument we were throwing around. Is that true or not? What do you
well,
think?
Well, I mean, when you talk about the success rate of rookies in terms of and listen, I know 1,000 yards or it doesn't mean what it used to mean, okay?
Still
but
pretty impressive
we'll
number,
just use
though.
That as a gauge.
Yep.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw this out here. Do you know the last time there wasn't a rookie running back, at least one, get 1,000 yards in this league?
The last time.
The last time.
I don't. I'll just throw out a random guess and say 1974.
No, not that far back. But
okay.
1992.
Okay.
Okay. But let's put it this way. There have been three times as many rookie running backs get 1,000 yards rushing as there have been rookie receivers or tight ends get 1,000 yards receiving.
Yep.
In the history of this league.
Mm-hmm.
There have been times. Last year we had 2,000-yard rookie runners.
Mm-hmm.
At times we've had three. My point being is, and it combines with your point, you can tell sometimes. Now, staying power is the key. But a lot of times you see, I mean, you know, you see guys who burst onto the scene, and a lot of even holdout running backs who are rookies
mm-hmm.
come in and flourish right away. Now, is the rookie running back as adept at picking up the blitz? Or swinging out of the backfield, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as pure running, it's the old Forrest Gump line. I was running.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot
movie.
Of natural part that goes with that.
Yep.
The receiver part gets a little more complicated unless
right.
you have a Terry Glenn or a Randy Moss or
right.
an Anquan Boldin who, you know, set the world under Marcus Colston.
Right.
Now, there's only a handful of those guys who adapt very, very well, running more precise routes, not rounding off their routes.
And,
understanding
right.
zone coverages and man-to-man coverages and so on.
And you think that that's really the reason why? Because as a running back, it's really, aside from the, you know, the blocking schemes and the, you know, catching out of the backfield, it's basically you get the handoff and you just basically kind of either know the hole or look for the opening. Whereas
that is not a knock on rookie running backs in the least.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
no, it's just the nature of the
position.
What
do we judge? If you're asking me who's the rookie of the year, and we're looking at a running back, are we ever talking about how they picked up the blitz out of the backfield?
Not unless that's one of their obvious strengths.
Right. It's like if we talk about a rookie defensive back and he has 9 interceptions.
Sure.
Are we ever talking about how he supports the run? Of course not.
Right. Again, unless it's one of those obvious
linebackers, we're always looking at their tackles and their sacks,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
even though they might get burned in coverage, but we give the guy the rookie of the year anyway because mm-hmm. he's got great numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a matter of the complete game, but if you got a rookie running back who runs for 1,400 yards, he's more than likely the rookie of the year.
Yeah, most likely, yeah. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, 508-543-7482. The phone number, we're talking with Russell Baxter from ESPN. As John likes to say, the only man at ESPN whose job it is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to talk and to analyze football, and 365 days a year, more importantly. John, as you may or may not know, Russell is somewhere in the mountains of West Virginia. He's heading to the University of West Virginia to do tonight's West Virginia Auburn game. So
now I'm going to do this for Gary's benefit.
Okay.
Okay. Strictly Gary.
Yeah.
He's not on a canoe trip, is he?
Stand by.
Way to set up, Russell. Way to set up.
Okay. I just throwing it out there.
I like that though. No, he. John's calling the game tonight. Believe for ESPN Radio. I guess there's not much cell phone service out in the mountains up there.
Yeah,
really
think?
Is mountaineer country. Really is mountaineer country. It's old school out
there.
Well,
yeah, depending on where. I mean, listen, we have a time getting a signal here in the basement of this building. So one can only imagine. But I'm sure John, being professional as he is, might have some good moonshine recipes by the time he gets back.
Here it is, Russell.
There we go.
Dueling banjos.
Sorry, my laptop froze for a moment there.
That's all right.
Oh, God.
Very romantic, Gary.
All right. So, overall, your impressions from Monday night were you were impressed not only with the score, but the way New England played.
Yes, I was. Okay, now, again, issues with injuries, obviously. Issues with, as far as pass blocking. Which something's going to get sacrificed when you're trying to change in midstream here. Something's going to get sacrificed, and combined with the inexperience of Matt Castle.
Mm-hmm.
But that style of football that they look at the Tennessee Titans the other day. Okay, you can say what you want. It's the Kansas City Chiefs. I understand that. But 332 yards rushing is 332 yards rushing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If anybody could do that every week, they would.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. And that's determination. That's physical football. Patriots always had a reputation for being a physical football team. And I think they, a couple early turnovers by the Broncos, Jay Cutler's finger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't explain how they got knocked off the wall. And a couple times, I tell you what's disheartening if you're a defense. When you know a team has got 4th-and-1
mm-hmm.
and you can't stop them, and I believe in both, at least in one instances, 4th-and-1 turned into about a 40-yard run.
I was going to say,
That will zap the life out of you right away.
Right. Demoralize
the team. That's what they did to Denver. I mean, we saw Denver earlier. Kansas City has won one game this year,
mm-hmm.
and Larry Johnson got 198 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's more the fact that the Patriots stuck with that more than anything else. And again, that style of football will serve them well. Against the St. Louis Rams this week.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of who's in the backfield, you think?
Regardless of who's in the backfield. Now it's a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We don't know. It
some
could
playing
be
playing time these last couple of weeks.
It could very well be Lamont Jordan and or Sammy Morris.
Yes, it could. But again, I think that style wise,
mm-hmm.
and St. Louis is not an overpowering defense. They've won the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
With their own run, and Dallas is having its own problem stopping the run. You notice these teams that stop the run are the ones that hang around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, run the ball and stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's 2008. That worked in the 30s, the 40s, the 20s, the 50s. It worked every decade.
It always does.
It always works.
Before we get on and look at some of the rest of the league, I want to answer a question from Brent in Illinois, who writes in, takes a shot at me, of course, because that's kind of what
is
we do
Brent
around here.
Is that Brent Musburger, by the way?
Boy,
okay.
No, I don't think so. Brent,
that's not very nice.
Brent Musburger's a classy guy.
Yes, we know that. I mean, an ESPN person.
That's
so
right.
I'd be surprised.
That's right. Part of the ESPN
Maybe
family.
It's actually Gary, and he managed to get a signal.
No, Brent in Illinois says, hey, Eric, Gary said that everyone loves you on this show. What, all three people? Yes, that's right. Gary, Russell, and John, who's not even here today. Those three, they all love me. Am I right, Gary?
Keep going.
Okay. Go ahead, play the Deliverance music again.
No, but his that wasn't his question. His question was, anyway, who's still waiting to be activated from from PUP, from the Patriots? There is one player, tackle Oliver Ross, who was on... He was on the non-football injury list, and I we're still waiting to get him activated, I believe. I think that's the only
right. Well, they just got Stephen
player.
Neal back.
They got Stephen Neal back. He played Monday night.
Right.
I guess sparingly is the best way to call it, but he sort of rotated in. Billy Yates, who'd been starting for him, started the game again. Mm-hmm. I believe Neal came in. It was the third and fourth series, offensive series for New England. Yates came back in after that, but then later on in the game, Neal came and played a little bit more. I think with him, it's just a matter of conditioning at this point, trying to get back into game shape.
But get him back in there, get a few plays,
right.
Get him back in the rotation. Listen, one of the things, and I'm going to go back to the Super Bowl for a second, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think people forget, and when you watch the game closely, you notice these things. And if you watch it in hindsight, after the fact,
mm-hmm.
But when Stephen Neal got hurt in the Super Bowl,
yes,
that changed.
It
and
sure
when he
did.
Was gone for the right guard spot,
yep,
that changed an awful lot of things.
Yeah,
an awful lot of things in that game.
Yeah, affected,
I'm not saying that's the
right.
reason they lost.
No. But,
but
it did,
people
it
forget
help.
That line, which was so cohesive all year,
mm-hmm.
when they lost him in the second quarter, I believe it was. That changed a lot of things that afternoon in Arizona.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, too, because when he came back in against Denver the other night, not on the very first play, but pretty close to right away, they tried to start running towards his side, get him out in space a little bit, pull him, go off the right side with the running game, trying to get him back because I think he's, like you said, one of the strengths of their O-line is him in the running game as a blocker, as a lead blocker, as a puller. And I think they're trying to work him back into getting that, and you saw some of that on Monday night.
Absolutely. They get those five guys from last year back all together again, three of them who went to the Pro Bowl last
mm-hmm.
year.
Now,
that can only
right.
be a good thing.
Now, Kazier didn't play Monday night at right tackle, Nick Kazier. He was out with an injury that he sustained the week before. But the good news about that, from my perspective at least, was that his replacement, Mark Lavore, who was just brought in this season, didn't notice him.
Right.
And as an offensive lineman, I think that's a good thing for the most part. Because usually if you're noticing them, they're either getting flagged or giving up a sack.
Or jumping offside.
Right, yeah.
Right.
And I haven't really heard Lavore's name or number called, which I think is a good thing.
Right.
So, you know, there's... Obviously, there are going to be some changes when you bring in a new guy to a rotation like that, especially one like the Pats, who's had success and consistency over the years. But Lavore's stepped in and done admirably to this point, I think. And that's it. Could have been just one of those things that would have added to the problems. You know, losing Brady, losing the running back,
absolutely.
Losing Harrison. You know, okay, now we've got the whole right side is out, but that hasn't really been the issue. I think. You know, Castle's sack number you mentioned before was astronomically high, but I think a lot of that is due, like you said, Russell, to his maybe just his inexperience and mm-hmm. maybe either giving up on a play too quickly in the pocket or not waiting long enough. And by that I mean somebody brought this up on our show the other day. If he would just step up a little bit more when he feels that pressure instead of trying to escape the pocket.
Right.
You'd see Brady do that a lot of times. He would
absolutely.
Maybe just take a half step forward by himself just that a little bit amount of time that he needed instead of tucking and running when there was an opening there.
Mm-hmm.
If he shows that kind of patience, I think that might be beneficial to him.
Listen, one of the great quarterbacks and a guy I've worked with here and consider him a friend and so on, is Steve Young.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get out of the mindset of tucking that ball away after, you know, you make a couple of reads,
mm-hmm.
and then learn that if you hang in 1 or 2 seconds longer, that you make that third read. You know, everything changed for Steve Young. He was a different kind of quarterback starting in 1992 than he had been in his Buccaneer days,
mm-hmm.
and his early days with the 49ers. And once he took that step, that's when he became a Hall of Fame quarterback and eventually a Super Bowl champion.
I would imagine.
Now, I'm not comparing Matt Castle to Steve Young. Everybody, mm-hmm. you know, don't calm down. But it takes time. It takes time. You can't do it in 5 games. Let's put it this way. If you could do it in 5 games, me and you would be doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and if I were also maybe, you know, 7 or 8 inches taller.
With all the other gifts and so on.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, but it's, boy, that must be hard to break that, especially when your instinct is, when you're athletic and, you know, your instinct, you see green grass in front of you, you know, you want to say, oh, I can do this. I can take it upon myself. That's
sure,
got to be really
there.
Hard.
I can get there.
Right.
You know, it's actually, you bring up a great point. On a different comparison, it's like Reggie Bush cutting the corner now in the NFL opposed to how he cut the corner in college.
Yep.
Oh, I'll get
yep.
there. Oh, guess what? This safety
yeah.
is faster.
Guys
than
are pretty fast. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing you learn. You learn how much the game speeds up.
Yeah.
And we're, by the way, we just talk about regular season. The pros always talk about how the game even gets even faster in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
just imagine that.
That's true. And hopefully, Castle's on his way to bring New England there to the playoffs. Let's look a little bit around the league this week. Buffalo and Miami are going head-to-head, and I think that's a good thing for New England, potentially, if Miami can knock them off and New England can do its job against the Rams, because that'll mean both teams will end up 5-2 atop the AFC East. Your thoughts on that game?
Well, I mean, I think Buffalo proved – I think they proved for the most of the year that they're for real. I think they took a big step last week.
With Trent Edwards, they are, I would add.
Oh, absolutely.
Because without him, I don't think they are.
Right. The third play of the game in Arizona, we saw
yes.
what life could be without Trent Edwards.
Right.
Okay.
Boy, it's
and
almost a lot like what could be without Tom Brady, almost.
Exactly.
Or probably worse.
Right.
A lot worse.
Well, in a different way worse, because here you're talking about a team that is still trying to find itself, okay, opposed to a veteran-laden team like the New England Patriots, who have had their share of adversity one way or the other. It doesn't always have to be the quarterback. It can be other ways.
Sure, and they've had plenty
and,
of
them. You know, the Buffalo Bills, as currently constructed, haven't been around that long. So, you know, this is a franchise that hasn't been to the playoffs. It's hard to believe. A franchise that hasn't been to the playoffs since the Music City Miracle
yeah.
in 1999. That's their mm-hmm. last playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
So now they go up against a Miami team. They've kind of had their number as of late, beating them 7 of the last 8 times, 4 straight. But, of course, this is a little different Miami team. Game's down in Miami. That mm-hmm. doesn't seem to matter to Buffalo and so on. But it'll be interesting to see how Buffalo's defense, which is better, but I don't think it's totally totally staunch against the run. I think you can run on them mm-hmm. If determined and so on and see how – the Dolphins running game, and with the wrinkles that they throw in there, that wildcat formation every once in a while, which I think is going to get eventually very old, and so on. See what they can do. The other thing I will say is this: Miami's defense has also done a much better job playing the run than it did a year ago. They were dead last against the run, so I know there was nowhere to go but up. The Dolphins, if there's one area that's really improved with them, it's their offensive and defensive lines, which is the core of any team. And that's why I think they'll give Buffalo some problems this week.
Mm-hmm. Well, it couldn't come at a better time, too. Like I said, if the Dolphins can knock them off and New England can handle the Rams, 5-2, both those teams, Buffalo and New England, at the top. And what more could you ask for from Matt Castle at this point?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is where it's going to get interesting now. For Buffalo, because, you know, just by the luck of the schedule or the quirk of the schedule, they now, I believe, have, they have the Dolphins this week, then the Jets, I think, and then they play New England, I believe, in week 10. I think they have three
Buffalo,
straight
yes.
divisional
yep.
games coming up.
Yep.
So we have they're the only team in the league that hasn't played a divisional game yet.
Yeah.
So that means they're going to actually play six divisional games in their last 10.
Yeah.
These things just happen every once in a while with the schedule. I remember one year the Niners wound up playing seven straight games against their division. Who knows how it happened? It just was one
seven
of those,
straight.
Seven straight in 1997.
Wow.
They lost to Tampa Bay in a game where people, fans, 49er fans will never forget. Jerry Rice was lost for most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Young got hurt. They came out with a kid named Jim Druckenmiller in the second game.
One of the all-time busts in the draft.
Yep, drunk on Miller, as we like to kid around sometimes. And all of a sudden, they then got hot. Got their act back together when Young got back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wrapped up their division so early, mostly because they played so many division games.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this is not a knock on Buffalo. It's just a matter. Well, you know, they just so happen that now is the time they're going to play the teams that where it counts the most. And you know, go 3-3, 4-2 in that division, they're going to win the division.
Yep.
But it has to start. You know,
so either they could separate themselves in the next few weeks, or they could come back to the pack pretty quickly. It looks
absolutely,
like.
Yeah. Absolutely, because you know as well as anyone, you know, teams tie at the end of the year. First tiebreaker is head to head, and if you split in the division, it's the rest of your divisional games.
Exactly.
That's why, even though you only play six divisional games anymore, it used to be in some instances you played eight.
Yep.
The divisional games are still the most important, and winning
sure.
division, and I know wild cards have been very successful in the Super Bowl
yeah.
and so on, winning that division is still the key.
Sure.
It's not easy to do. New England's won the East 5 years in a row. The Colts won the South 5 years in a row. Seattle's won their division 4 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is every one of those streaks might be in jeopardy this year.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting is the understatement to say.
Well,
at
and
least
that's
about
the league,
league
now. For whatever reason, you know, call it parity, call it salary cap, call it whatever it is.
Yep.
That's why you have to admire what stuff that New England and Indianapolis and to a degree Green Bay and Pittsburgh and so on. The teams that can stay consistent and near the top and be in contention every year. Very hard thing to do in today's NFL.
Mm. And I said earlier in the show, you know, if there was ever a year for New England to suffer the kind of losses they have injury-wise and to go through this kind of adversity, it would be this year, because I don't really see any clear-cut dominant team in the AFC or even throughout the NFL for that matter.
No, you haven't. There hasn't been anybody who you just look at. And I think even though Tennessee is 6-0, I think people still kind of question. They don't question that defense. I mean, that defense.
No, the defense is legit. Right.
Very legit. But I think people still question the offense.
Right.
And do they have enough balance on the offense? And
they kind of remind me of the Ravens earlier this decade.
Absolutely. I mean, those comparisons have been all over the place.
Yep.
And they are. They do remind you of that. Mm-hmm. The only thing that their defense doesn't necessarily do as much as the Ravens is actually put points on the board.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens also, if you remember that year with Jermaine Lewis,
yep.
had outstanding special teams.
Yes, they did. Very good
as far
return
as returns
game.
And so yep. on. And Tennessee kind of lacks that a little. So the fact that they don't get the benefit of a big return on in field position, you know, that Ravens defense, here's what people forget. They set the record in 2000 for fewest points allowed. With 165. Now, that's fewest points allowed in a 16-game season, Eric.
Yep.
They then played four playoff games. Their defensive unit gave up one touchdown in four playoff games.
That's incredible.
And they gave up only 23 points. So when it was all said and done, in 20 games that year, the Baltimore Ravens gave up less than 200 points.
It's amazing.
And you think about teams that go through a 16-game season, and like last year, the Colts led the NFL in points allowed, 262.
Wow.
In a 16-game season. That's an outstanding season.
Sure.
But just think
they
about
led the
playing
league.
20 games and giving up less than 200.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, we talked about the optimistic side of this weekend with New England and Buffalo. Let's be honest and balanced here and look at the other side. At 4-2, the team trailing them is the 3-3 New York Jets, who are home versus probably the worst team in football, the Kansas City Chiefs. So if things go as expected in New York and there's a hiccup again here in Foxborough, you could be looking at 4-3 and 4-3, New England and the Jets tied for second in the division. Brody Croyle and his backup, Damon Heward, both were placed on IR this week. It looks like the poor Thigpenkin is going to have to lead the offense, at least for now, in Kansas City. Do they have any shot of winning, do you think, in New York? Herm Edwards' old stomping grounds?
I'm just going to say this. This is why I always laugh when people say, well, here comes the easy part of their schedule. Was it easy when they went out to Oakland last week?
No way.
Found a way to lose. They ran for like 242 yards, or well over, I mean, close to 250 yards, and lost that game last week.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams a couple weeks ago beat the Redskins in Washington. You know, that's how the league is. The good teams beat the teams they're supposed to beat. And it's sitting at 3-3. I don't know if we know yet if the Jets are a good team. Mm-hmm. I know they have a good quarterback who has had his bad moments, threw a couple picks last week and probably should have thrown a couple more.
Mm-hmm.
And their defense is better, but offensively they're a little stagnant. And, Kansas City, which three times this year already has given up 200 yards rushing. Twice this year they've given up 300 yards rushing.
Mm-hmm.
You would think this would be a big day for Thomas Jones and the Jets offensive line. But I have to see it first, because this pattern of up and down and up and down by the Jets, it's just not doing it. Listen, you're not going to get six or seven turnovers like Arizona did to them a couple weeks ago and score 56 points.
Right.
That's not going to happen every week.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets need to get some sort of offensive flow going, or they're going to be an 8-8, 9-7 football team by year's end.
And you know what, Russell, looking at the standings and just looking at teams around the league, it looks like that's the prevailing sentiment in the league this year, that teams are up and down, schizophrenic, if you want to call it that. You never know what you're going to get one week to the next.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of teams could end up 8-8, 7-9, or around there, sort of hovering around 500. But the way the league is, it looks like that could potentially win your division.
Yeah, well, I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, if it's going to be one of those, listen, last year we had 3-13-3 teams and a 16-0 team. That doesn't necessarily happen. I mean, you know, I hear a lot of people saying before the beginning of the year, you know, how's a team going to go, you know, match what they did. I mean, I think the example Eric came up with is, you know, Aaron Rodgers, it's not going to be a good year if he can't match what Brett Favre did last year. Well, I got to hear a little known fact, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Since the Super Bowl era, which is 1966 season, okay, and including the AFL,
mm-hmm.
Do you know how many times a team has turned around and won at least 13 games in back-to-back seasons? Now, it has happened, so I'm not saying it hasn't happened.
I know the Patriots did it this decade.
Mm-hmm.
They went 14-2 2 years in a row.
That's correct.
I'm pretty sure the Colts did it this decade, or at least during the Manning era.
The Colts have a couple 12s. The Colts didn't do it.
Oh, they didn't.
No, but I'll cut to the chase here.
Okay.
It's only happened six times. And then the only instance in which a team repeated a Super Bowl champion, and that was the Patriots.
And those 14.
Okay, the 89-40, I'll just throw some out. The 85 Bears, of course, went 15-1, won a Super Bowl.
Right.
The 86 Bears won 14-2 and lost in the divisional playoffs.
Yeah, to the Redskins.
The 89 Niners won Super Bowl 24. The 90 mm-hmm. Niners, and both those teams were 14-2, lost the NFC Championship game.
Yep.
Tennessee went 13-3 back-to-back years, didn't win a Super Bowl either year. Lost the Super Bowl,
wow.
Got knocked out by the Ravens.
Tennessee.
So I'm just throwing a couple out there. But instead, my point is that winning 13 games back-to-back years is hard,
mm-hmm.
much less 14 games back-to-back mm-hmm. years is hard. So those teams were naturally, by the odds and by history, were going to take a dip. So what if we have a bunch of 10-6s and 11-5s mm-hmm. winning divisions this year? The rules still dictate that six teams in each conference are getting the playoffs. And let's not forget, the team that actually won the Super Bowl last year was not 16-0, it was 10-6.
Mm-hmm.
So the key is, any more in this league, or a league that in the last 11 years, the team with the best record or tied for the best record has not won the Super Bowl, you ready for this, 9 times.
Wow.
Out of 11 years. The key now is to beat George Mason, like the NCAA tournament, and just get in
the
playoffs.
Yeah, because once that happens, the Giants proved it last year.
Absolutely. And listen, to a degree, even though they did not get into the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, everybody thought it was a down year for the Patriots in 2006, even though they were 12-4.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
But they beat the Jets in the playoffs.
Yep.
They weren't supposed to beat San Diego in San Diego
right.
and did it.
Right.
And then, remember who the number one and two seeds were in the AFC that year? It was San Diego and Baltimore.
And Baltimore.
Okay, who won in the AFC championship game? The Colts and the Patriots.
Yeah.
So.
That's, wow, yeah. We forget. It's so recent, but yet we tend to forget those kind of things.
Well, we forget that the last 3 years, it has not taken 19 games to win a Super Bowl. It's taken 20.
Right.
The wild card Steelers.
The wild card teams, yeah.
The number three seed Colts.
Right.
And the wild card Giants.
Right.
So just get in. Just get in. Be Duke, George Mason, or Marquette.
That's right.
That's all you need to be. Just get in.
So we've covered the AFC East. The rest of the AFC looks like this. Pittsburgh leading the North at 5-1. And the up-and-down Ravens with the rookie quarterback at 3-3 are next in that division. Cleveland underachieving at 2-4. Cincinnati fighting with Kansas City for worst team in the league status at 0-7. Are you a believer in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, and we're going to go back to style here. And now, of course, they do at times get away from it like they did in the first half against Cincinnati last week. But when that team runs, and remember, they've won three games in a row. No Willie Parker. Their backup
right.
back, the rookie, Rashard Mendenhall.
Rashard Mendenhall out, yep.
Okay?
Yep.
So they've been able to win games, and including one of those wins was at Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in a very physical. Remember, the Steelers won two games in 7 days against two of the most physical teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
They hung on and beat Baltimore, and then they came back 6 days later and beat Jacksonville in Jacksonville, a team that had dominated them the recent years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that's you have to be impressed with Pittsburgh as of late. Well, first off, the quarterback is a never say die guy. Okay,
yeah.
And even though the offensive line at times lets them down. They are getting better. I mean, they've had to replace one of the great guards of the last decade, Alan Faneca,
mm-hmm.
and they've done a decent job doing that. But their defense is back to being very, very formidable and physical. They're leading the league in sacks, and sacks aren't everything. But that tandem of James Harrison and Lamar Woodley on the outside, I mean, those are the old days from like the mid-90s of, and again, this is, I'm just talking style-wise. That's old-fashioned Kevin Green, Greg Lloyd type of stuff
mm-hmm.
that you're seeing in terms of the pressure from the outside. James Harrison has 8.5 sacks in 6 games.
He's been impressive.
He had 8.5 sacks last year.
Yeah, yep, I remember.
And he went to the Pro Bowl last year. And by the way, you know, we always talk about the Steelers as a linebacker factory.
Yep.
James Harrison is an undrafted
That's right.
player.
That's right.
Okay. Lamar Woodley was a defensive end at Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
He now has 7.5 sacks playing the outside linebacker.
Yeah.
He also has 3 defensive fumble recoveries this year as well,
yep.
Including that big return that helped key the rally against Baltimore when it looked like they were almost dead in the water on Monday night.
Yep.
So, yeah, they are. Now, they're cutting on, and I'm not one of those schedule guys because we talked about it earlier. You play who you have to play. But I will say this. If you are a Steelers backer or you have tickets to play games, to watch games in Pittsburgh, whether you think they're going to win the games or not, how's this for a stretch in terms of marquee value? The Steelers host the Giants this week.
Yeah, great.
They go to Washington on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
They then come home and in 3 straight home games play the Colts, the Chargers, and then the Bengals on a Thursday night. And then they follow that up with a little chaser called the New England mm-hmm. Patriots in Foxborough.
Yeah.
And then come back home and play the Dallas Cowboys.
Who are struggling right now.
Right. So in terms of strictly marquee value and not how everybody's playing,
mm-hmm.
if you have tickets to Steeler games, hopefully you're going to see some pretty good football in the next 2 months.
Yeah.
Be it from one team or both teams.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. In the South, Tennessee, AFC South, Tennessee 6-0, hosting division rival Indianapolis this week, Monday night. Indy's struggling big time. They're 3-3, and I think they could easily be 1-5 because they won 2 games that I think you know the Houston game and the Minnesota game.
A miraculous Houston
where they had,
win.
Yeah,
got outplayed for almost 3 quarters at Minnesota.
Right.
Back and won. Their most complete game was obviously against the Ravens. But
right.
Last week they followed that up with you know Peyton Manning throwing 2 touchdown passes to the other team.
Mm-hmm.
So. interesting. Here's what I'll say, and I'll steal a line from Marv Levy that Chris Berman always tells me about. The only must win, you know, there's no such thing as a must win. World War II was a must win, which I think is one of the funnier prophetic lines you'll ever hear.
Yeah.
But if the Indianapolis Colts have any designs on winning the AFC South, which they've won for 5 years in a row, they have to beat the Tennessee Titans in Tennessee on Monday night.
Yep.
And very simply, if they do, they will have a win over Tennessee. They will only be two games out of first place with nine games to go. They've already won two road divisional games. Now, they lost to Jacksonville at home, so that could really come back and bite them.
Right.
But Jacksonville already went to Tennessee and lost.
Yep.
If Tennessee beats the Colts on Monday night and digs them four games out with nine games to play, then the task is going to be Herculean.
Yeah.
But I think the Colts will rise up. On Monday night.
I do, too. I pick them in our picks contest we do every Thursday on PFW in Progress, and I pick that in the upset.
I think they will because they have to. I'm not saying they had to win the other games, but I think this will be a – listen, the whole – a lot of the country has not seen Tennessee play. They know they're 6-0, okay? But this is a big spotlight game for them.
Right.
And I'll be interested to see how they handle it because whether you – believe in those things or not. You know, we saw it with Jacksonville last year, the big spotlight game playing the Colts on a Monday night at home, and they wound up getting their doors blown off. And it eventually, since they only lost, you know, they lost the division by two games, but they got swept by the Colts last year.
Right.
When it's all said and done, you know, Tennessee's good start, if they wind up losing a couple games in the division and two of them are to the Colts, they still could get nipped at the wire at the very end. And I believe the Colts and Titans, I think, play the last game of the year at Indianapolis. So, but if the Colts have any designs, there's no question they have to win this game Monday night.
Quickly, that leaves us with the AFC West, where the Broncos, surprisingly, are still at the top there at 4-3, despite looking awful on Monday night against
Lennon. Actually, Eric, awful after a 3-0 start. They're like the Dallas Cowboys in the sense that 3-0 and now 4-3.
Right.
They've dropped three of their last four games. Their defensively, even though when they were winning, their defenses looked horrible.
And that was evident Monday night. San Diego's right behind them at 3-4, another one of those Jekyll and Hyde teams. Oakland surprisingly playing tough, no matter who the head coach is at this point, at 2-4. And Kansas City somehow got a win a few weeks ago, and they're 1-5. But this looks like, of all the divisions in the AFC, this looks like it could be the weakest link of those four.
And who would have thunk that a couple of years ago and so on?
But, right.
It's really kind of panned out the way. I mean, Denver has done this before, gotten off to a decent start, and all of a sudden looked faded. But defensively, they look terrible. And let's take Kansas City, by the way, a step further. You know, about this time last year, in fact, it was just about this time last year, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs are 4-3 and first place in the AFC West.
Yeah, I remember that. Everyone,
you know what,
like,
their record is since being 4-3?
I think they've won
one
game.
14.
Yeah, 1-14.
1-14.
Herm's and not going to last.
It's been tough. And now, you know, not Herm's fault all entirely. This is a team that, you know, went into the off season with the youth movement. You know, I still can't understand why they didn't trade Tony Gonzalez last week. They drafted 12 players, have a lot of young players on their roster and so on. So they're trying to rebuild through the draft and so on, but they're taking their lumps. And, you know, last week Tennessee made them look really, really bad on their own home field and so on. And they're going to have to get another quarterback in there. I don't think there's any question about it. There's some talk about maybe Dante Culpepper coming out of retirement and so on. But I know they signed Quinn Gray this week. But they you know, there's rebuilding and then there's overhauling. And right now they're in the midst of rebuilding with a twinge of overhauling.
Yeah.
You know, that being said, I can't disagree with you. You know, just in terms of quality of play, the AFC West, I mean, you can't count on San Diego. You didn't look like you can count on Denver. Wouldn't it be a hoot if the Raiders came back and won the division?
Boy, that would be, I think, not only a shot, it would be one of the better stories in the NFL if that were to happen, just given the circus that has become the Raiders. But you know, for the players' sake, I think that would be for the Raiders players' sake, because they've shown heart in playing for either Lane Kiffin or
which they played very hard for Lane
or
Kiffin.
Cable.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when you saw them against the Saints a couple of weeks ago, Eric, mm-hmm. I mean, that was disappointing to watch because they had played for it. They looked like they had all been in that press conference mm-hmm. when they played against the Saints.
Yeah.
The one we all watched on TV.
Right.
But
right.
to their credit, they hung in last week. Mm-hmm. And Sebastian Janikowski nails a 57-yard field goal in overtime.
Yeah. Still has
a
the
record
leg.
For an overtime-winning field
Still
goal.
Still has the leg.
And they escape. And who knows, if Denver and San Diego keep putzing around and, you know, Oakland can somehow scrounge together a couple of wins,
mm-hmm.
who knows? Could Oakland beat Baltimore this week? Sure they could.
Possibly.
With a rookie
sure.
quarterback?
Yeah.
Sure they could.
Sure.
Could they get a couple turnovers and win the battles and lose the war? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes this league fun. Who would have thought it that it's not inconceivable? Now Denver is off this week, so they'll stay at 4-3. But what if San Diego loses at London to New Orleans, and the Raiders somehow beat Baltimore? All of a sudden, they'll leapfrog San Diego. The most important game this week is obviously in Indianapolis, Tennessee.
Sure.
The battle for survival game
mm-hmm.
is San Diego, New Orleans over yep. in London.
Yep. Yeah, and those are two teams that are
a lot of people picked New Orleans to win that division. A lot of people put San Diego in the Super Bowl.
Sure,
one of them's going to be 3-5, barring a tie.
Right.
I don't think you can have. Are you allowed to have a tie in London? Gary, you know, you need the international. But Gary, can you get a little?
You have tea at 4 o'clock.
Canya music on there.
You have tea at 4 o'clock. Maybe you have a tie at 5.
There
o'clock.
You go. That's perfect.
How's
there you
that?
Go.
And before we let you go, Russell, in the NFC, it looks like this: the NFC East. Is by far the best division, I think, quality-wise. The Giants are playing well. The Redskins are surprisingly playing well. They have a little bit of a consistency issue with how they play, but they're winning.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas, we already mentioned them, starting off 3-0. And
yeah, it's Jerry's team.
And the Eagles, you never know what kind of team you're going to get. I think Westbrook has become the key to that team. If he's healthy and plays, they win. If he's not, they don't.
By the way, really intriguing game with Atlanta this week.
Yeah. Because the Falcons are playing, at least in my mind, surprisingly well
football.
with Matty Heisman.
Right. Very Matt solid Reisen, football.
Matt
Michael Turner
mm-hmm.
and a revived John Abraham.
Yeah.
And they've already won as many games as they won last year. It's almost like the earmark, these games. You know, you have the important game. You have the survival game.
Mm-hmm.
The most intriguing games, you know, obviously Giants-Pittsburgh is huge.
Sure.
But more from a stand fact of, you know, it's Roethlisberger, Manning, the two teams that won two of the last three Super Bowls, and so on. But as far as sometimes sheer importance and intrigue,
mm-hmm.
Atlanta, Philadelphia,
yep,
and Arizona at Carolina,
mm-hmm.
battle of first place teams in Carolina this week.
Yep. Arizona, the cream of that division right now, the NFC West.
Well, it's funny you use that word because the rest of the division basically has been creamed.
Yeah.
Although the Rams have won two in a row, beating the Redskins and the Cowboys all of a sudden.
The
Rams are like the second hot team in that division, and the Niners and Seahawks, who play each other this week,
and an awful,
headed
awful
in the
matchup.
Opposite direction.
Oh boy, hate to have tickets to that game, huh? Wow.
Well, very interesting. You know, Mike Nolan, of course, was fired this week, the third mm-hmm. in-season firing we've had.
Yep.
Of a head coach.
Has that ever happened before? Do you think?
I'm trying to think of firings. We've had years where guys have stepped down.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, all three of these guys, Linehan and Kiffin,
of their own accord,
have actually been fired.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We've only had, I want to say, like 6 or 7 firings this decade.
Right.
In the middle of the season. But
right.
Three of them have now come this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting. But, you know, there's so much talk about is Mike Holmgren, who we know it's his last year in Seattle,
yep.
is eventually – and maybe probably not next year, is he eventually going to be the 49ers head coach?
Well, if Mike Singletary gets the nod full-time there in San Francisco, you would think he'd be there at the very least, 2-3 years?
You would hope so.
So
I think it's a golden opportunity for them. That's not a team devoid of talent. It just isn't. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, did they have bad luck with the quarterback, Alex
yep.
Smith?
Mm-hmm.
And probably even more bad luck, Eric, when you know, not bad luck for Norv. He wound up being a head coach in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Smith was headed on a pretty good path when Norv Turner was his offensive coordinator 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the Niners change coordinators often certainly didn't help. And now he's got the injury problems and so on.
Right.
I'm sure his career with the Niners is very much in doubt.
Right. The rest of the league looks like this. NFC South, Bucks and Panthers, both 5-2 leading, followed closely by 4-2 Atlanta and the Saints, the up-and-down Saints, 3-4. The NFC North has the Bears and Pack tied at 4-3, Minnesota right behind at 3-4, and the winless Lions at 0-6. So the South and the East, to me, look like the strongest divisions in the NFC. North and West look to be toss-ups.
Yeah, what'll make the North interesting is we haven't seen it yet, but we haven't gotten to our Bears-Packers meetings of the year yet. And those are the teams mm-hmm. that are in first place right now. Minnesota, you have to say, has been a disappointment.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, can their special teams do something? Their special teams, between fumbles, blocked punts, and punt returns, have given up 5 touchdowns this year
wow.
in 7 games.
Wow.
That's crippling. I mean, they outgained the Bears almost 2-1 last week and yet lost 48-41 because they had problems with their special teams.
Mm. Well, as always, Russell, great information. Great talking with you. One of our emailers, Todd from Nova Scotia, wrote in to say wants to thank you for coming on the show every week. You're very knowledgeable and entertaining, he says, and I agree with him.
Well, thank you, Todd, and I will expect my salmon, some lox and bagels.
Want it delivered?
Well, I want it overnighted.
Overnighted.
That's something I expect to get in the mail 4 days later.
You know what? You're better off doing what we do on this show, is where we have fans call to the nearest location near you and have it delivered fresh. Because if you put it in the mail, you're risking getting it there in one piece and getting it there.
That's true. And Subway, I don't think Subway has the bagel and lox special anymore, do they?
I don't know.
No. Todd, thank you very much. It's very nice of you.
I had
fun when you come on here. I love doing this show.
He had one question. The Brady injury, has it ever happened before where a reigning MVP has gone out for the year in the first game? Gone out for the season in the first game of the year. I don't think it has.
I can't remember the first game. The last time I remember somebody who was the reigning MVP going out this early, I think, was Terrell Davis, who got hurt, I think it was like the fourth or fifth game after the 98 season. In 99, he blew out his knee against the Jets, and in essence was never really the same player again.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't so, that.
But no, this was literally unprecedented to see something happen this early. I mean, I'm trying to just... scour my mind and so on as far as this early mm-hmm. and so on. But, I mean, it's just it's not even the fact that he was all – it's not only that he was the MVP, Todd. I'll talk to Todd for a sec.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the MVP. He's also the offensive player of the year. You know, that's one of the things that's been interesting this year. Think about what we've seen. The offensive player of the year and MVP is missing pretty much the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
The defensive player of the year has hardly been seen this year. That's Bob Sanders.
Yeah.
For the Indianapolis Colts.
Right.
Let's throw in Sean Merriman.
Mm-hmm.
For people who don't think that he's the best defensive player of the year, you'll have that debate all the time and so on. And speaking of key injuries, and from Monday night, by the way, Champ Bailey, now out 4 to 6
yeah,
weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, another perennial Pro Bowl
rough year to
player.
Be a star in the NFL is this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, it has been. You know, the opening week of the season on our Sunday Countdown show, our guys were posed the question, who can least afford to have a week like week one again? And the natural answer, of course, was the New England Patriots.
Mm.
My own personal answer happened to be the National Football League.
Yeah.
And, we always look toward week 9, which we'll talk next week, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Week 9 is almost like the second kickoff of the season. It's no coincidence. That's why we always have Patriots Colts week
sure,
9.
Sure.
Which this year will be the fourth year in a row they'll play on week 9.
Yep.
I'm just hoping there's a few people around by week 9
to play in the game.
To actually yeah. play in these games.
Well, like you said, we will talk about it next week, and it'll be a fun one to talk about. Russell, thanks for doing an extended tour with us today without John on the show. I know you probably miss him too, and he should be back next week, and I will be too, but. I think we miss John.
Oh, absolutely. And we kid because we care, but more so we're concerned. and by the way, the over-under on Adam Vinatieri flashbacks beating the Rams in the Super Bowl on the Fox broadcast this week is?
Six.
said, okay, works for me.
How's that?
There you go.
All right. Well, Russell, great again, as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, Eric. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Russell Baxter from ESPN, Mr. NFL for that network. His job, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, is all about football. He's one lucky man. We got a couple more items left up for the show, but we're going to take a we're going to hear from Matt Cassel, who talked late today in the open locker room period, and also from St. Louis head coach Jim Haslett, who did a conference call with the New England media as well this week. We're going to get to both of those right after this break.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Carter's a new technique!
Revolution.
Anytime we can get the running game going, it's a plus for me. It makes my job a lot easier. And it sets up so many other dimensions of the game plan that to be able to go in and run the ball consistently like we did, it's always a big boost.
Matt, how helpful was it, you know, you had the slip screen touchdown to Randy and West guys, you know, run after a catch. I mean, is that something that can really help a quarterback when receivers have room to kind of roam after you give them the ball?
There's no doubt. I mean, when you can get the ball in those guys' hands, they're great athletes, and that's what they're here to do is make plays and break tackles. And so anytime you can get the ball in the receiver's hands with some space, then you let them and their natural abilities take over.
Matt, you talk about the being offensive player of the week.
I didn't even know until yesterday somebody told me, and I was pretty shocked, to be completely honest. And I really think it comes down to the team played really well, and it says a lot about us getting the running game going in the offensive line, because this game's definitely it comes down to 11 people playing together, and I think that's really what it is. It's more for the offensive side of the ball than anything else.
Matt, is that just the nature of the team game, or is it just the nature of your position, one
that's part of it, I guess. You know, you got to take the good and the bad. And as a quarterback, you know, they're always looking at you, whether it's good or bad. So this week it obviously turned out on the plus side, and hopefully we'll continue that.
Matt, how did because of this prepare for St. Louis? You got what they did early in the season, which is not much, and what they did the last 2 weeks.
Well, they're playing great football right now, and we're on a short week, and we've done the best of our abilities to catch up. And they're a good team, and we're preparing hard and getting ready.
What do you see from them?
They've got a great front four with Little and Long. They've got active linebackers with Witherspoon and Draft. They've Chavis is obviously an experienced safety, and their secondary is playing really well, and their scheme's been really effective the last few weeks and throughout the season, really. So we've got our work cut out for us, and we just have to prepare to the best of our abilities and get ready to go.
Matt, are you still leaning on Tom at all for advice, and have you been in contact with him recently?
I talk to Tom usually once, twice a week, and I always lean on him for advice, and he's always there for me.
Is he frustrated with the problems he's been having with his knee and trying to get better and trying to, you know, get everything back on track?
We don't really talk about his injury situation much, to be completely honest. Well, it's more football oriented. So in terms of injuries or anything like that, I think it'd be best suited if you probably went to him about that.
What's the most helpful thing he said to you?
Excuse me?
The most helpful thing he said to you along the way?
Yeah, you said just be yourself, you know. Don't try to do too much, and don't take the weight of the world on your shoulders. Just try to go out there and execute the offense, and then move forward, and you'll get better week by week.
How difficult is it to take one positive performance like you had last week and translate it into another positive performance this week in this league?
You know, from 1 week to the next, everything changes from who you're playing to the defensive scheme, and so you just try to build on the things that you did well and then correct the things that you did poorly in the game, and then move forward from there, and hopefully you just continue to get better and better and better as you move forward.
Is there one particular area that you're really locked in on trying to get better at?
There's a number of different areas, and I mean, I could go and I don't really want to go into specifics, but there's constant things that you have to work on, and I don't think as long as anybody plays this game, you never master it, because there's so many things that are always changing. I really don't know, like I said, the status of Tom from an injury standpoint. All I know is that when I talk to him, he's in high spirits and he sounds good, and he says that he's recovering well.
Matt, I know you said you don't want to get specific areas, but last week in one area, was six sacks. Is that something that you're working on? What can you guys do to kind of limit the sacks so far?
I think from a quarterback standpoint, I need to do a better job of probably throwing the ball away when I need to, and you know, there's times where I'm trying to let the play develop downfield, and if I'm standing in there too long, then I just need to learn when that time clock goes off and just throw it away. And so that's an area, of course, that I can help the offensive line out with. Obviously, those sacks, a lot of those sacks aren't on them; they're on me, because whether it's I'm trying to scramble around, make a play, or do something like that, and that's just something that I'm getting a little bit more used to as I go forward, instead of knowing that sometimes the defense is going to have the right play called against us, and I just have to throw the ball away and take the loss and go from there.
Tom would often talk about moving around in the pocket. Is that another thing that you're still getting a feel for, is moving around in that pocket?
Yeah. I mean, you always try to work on little things, and I think moving around the pocket is something that your comfort level is continuing to grow and everything like that. And so you want to be able to move and make plays happen.
Is this an impossible thing to work on in practice?
Not really. I mean, we constantly work on moving in the pocket and moving around, and it's.
I'm talking more about the internal clock, knowing when to get rid of the ball. That thing.
Yeah. It's a little bit more difficult because you don't have that constant pressure of the rush coming at you, and really, when the game speed kicks in and you feel those guys and you start to move around, then that's really where you start to learn and feel it. So, hopefully, we continue to grow in that area.
Has been Jarvis Green Ellison worked with the offense a little more this week?
He's been working with the offense the last few weeks, and he's a good player, and hopefully he'll continue to build on his performance and go from there.
They've obviously been great for the Rams, at least it looks that way from afar. What do you feel has contributed to the turnaround?
Well, I just think more than anything, it's the players wanting to get the job done, and they've been practicing well, and guys, you know, they've been into it, and we just try to get them to understand that, you know, that we're not the baddest team as everybody thought, and we just, you know, you just got to try to do things right.
Did I read right, and was it correct that you sort of gathered not just the players but everyone in the organization as sort of that transition took place from Scott to yourself and sort of talked a little bit, or is that true, and if it is, why did you do that?
I just thought that there was a separation in the building between football, business, management, and marketing, and I didn't. If as long as I'm here, I just thought that somehow you have to try to come together and be one. So I opened up practice, told those people to come out and practice, to eat with the players, to do different things. Because obviously, if we win games, it helps all those people, and the more they can do to help us, it will be better. So it was just one of those deals. I want everybody to be positive and feel good about the team, and try to come to grips with that. You know, we're 0-4, but we're going to fight and scratch and do whatever we got to do to try to win some games.
How much is the mindset of the team better, and how much does that correlate onto the field?
Well, they obviously winning a couple games, you always have a better mindset than when you lose 4 in a row. So from that standpoint, it's a lot better. But I just think, I guess you got to talk to the players on this. I just think the mindset's obviously much better when you beat two teams like Washington and Dallas that, guys are at least starting to feel good about themselves.
Was that daunting? I mean, you took over, you got the bye week to get everything straightened out, but you look at the schedule, you got Redskins, Cowboys, Patriots. I know you take it one at a time, but yeah. That's not easy to get your footing when you're facing a three-game stretch like that.
Yeah, and after that, it's not easy either because we got Arizona, and then we go away versus New York and San Francisco. So besides playing good teams, we're playing a lot of them on the road. And, I don't really look at it that way. I just kind of look at it like, that you're playing one good football team and do whatever you can to try to win that game and then go to the next one. And if you fail or you have some adversity, then you move on and just keep trying to, plug away here.
How do you admire how the Patriots have always handled adversity?
Well, they've done a great job. Bill's one of the best coaches ever been in the game, and he does about as good a job as anybody doing that. You lose a quarterback, you plug in a guy that didn't play much in college, and you don't miss much. They're still 4-2. They got a great defense. He's lost numerous coaches over the years, players over the years, and they just keep having success. So he's probably the master at it.
What type of progress has Chris Long made, and how is he sort of being utilized?
Well, Chris has really kind of stepped forward the last couple games, and here's a guy that was a two-gapper in college, and has moved to an outside defensive end position. He's never played. He's moved farther away from the ball, but I think Chris gets better and better every week. I thought he had his best game last week. He didn't have sacks, but he had a bunch of quarterback hits. He's very active, and he's always going to be very active because that's the kind of guy he is. But I think every day he's out on the field, he gets better and better.
Was the move back to Mark Bulger a no-brainer?
Well, to me it was, but everybody looks at it different. But the thing I like about Mark right now is I see great ownership in his team. Guy's really taken the leadership role. He's talked to the team. He runs the sideline. He handles the offense. And when I took over, I told him, when you became the quarterback, you had Marshall Faulk, you had Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce on the line that's been together for 5 years, so you were the youngster. Now it's kind of flipped. You're the old guy, and you got a bunch of young kids around you, and a line that hasn't played together for that long, so you need to step up and be that guy. And I thought he's done a great job.
Do you believe in momentum? I mean, does beating Washington and Dallas help you in any tangible way preparing for this week?
I don't know. I think it helps. It sure doesn't hurt. But, to go up there is a great challenge. You're talking about going up to a place that's a hostile environment and the weather conditions and playing a team that's got, a ton of Super Bowls and a great coach. So we got our work cut out for us, and hopefully we can just go out there and play as well as we can.
How's it? Am I pronouncing it right, Otagwe?
Yeah, OJ.
He seems to have a pretty good nose for the ball. Can you explain that?
Great nose for the ball. Yeah, he's a guy that when we got here, he wasn't playing much, and we just kind of stuck him in there, and, you know, based off what we saw in college. And besides having a great nose for the ball, he's an excellent tackler. He's a guy that's always trying to get the ball out. He's extremely fast. He's extremely smart. He's a great kid. And I was disappointed he didn't make the Pro Bowl last year with his 8 interceptions. And, you know, I don't see why he wouldn't make it this year, because the guy is one of the best safeties in the league.
I know you don't have to make the decision now, but Jackson and Pace, physically, you still think they're on target?
Yeah, Pace will play this week. Jackson will be day-to-day. I'm not really sure what he'll do when it comes to Sunday. You know, he didn't do anything today. He'll start working a little bit tomorrow. We'll see where he's at.
Jim, I believe they looked at you to be before you took the Saints job in 2000. Do you remember the process you went through here, you know, when Bill was ultimately picked as the coach?
Do I remember the process that in New England?
Yeah.
Was that the question?
Yeah, back when they looked at you to be head coach in 2000. I know you hadn't been one before.
Yeah, well, I remember when I went through the process, but
that's what I'm saying.
I'm not really sure of the question.
Well, the process you went, I mean, can you recall, I know you were named the coach of the Saints, that you became the coach of the Saints, but do you remember going through that, you know, coming up here and interviewing and the rest of it?
Well, I didn't come up to New England to interview. I think Bill had that job before that. I was with the Steelers then. I interviewed at, I can't remember where I interviewed then, but I was like Philadelphia, Seattle, and I think Chicago was the other one.
What's your thought? I mean, I know it's sort of old now, but when the Dolphins came in here in week 3 with that Wildcat stuff, I mean, what's your thought on that, and have you guys tried that at all?
Well, we don't have anybody who can do that, to be honest with you. You know, Ronnie Brown is a guy that can really throw the ball, and he can run that offense. They got a coach on their staff, David Lee, who was the offensive coordinator at Arkansas, and so it's easier to implement. When they can tell those guys, we're not going to run that stuff, because we really don't have guys that can do that. But they did a nice job. We watched the game. They did a nice job with it, but I think it just caught New England by surprise more than anything.
Jim, how did going through 2005 with the Saints and being displaced by Katrina, you know, help you as a coach or deal with adversity that you face now? Or
this is easy compared to that. You know, taking over a team that was 0-4 is a lot easier than the things we went through then. Yeah, I don't have enough time on the radio right now, or on the telephone to describe what I went through. You know, with the players and the hurricane and the loss of families and lives and homes. So, but it was something you hope no one ever has to go through again. I can promise you that.
What were your impressions of the way the Patriots dispatched the Broncos on Monday night?
Well, I couldn't sleep. I watched it on TV. I was, you know, just the way they played up front, and, you know, the way Sammy ran the ball, and I thought the quarterback was poised and did a nice job on the offensive side. And on defense, you know, they got big plays and turnovers, and they've always had, you know, Brad Sealy's one of the better coaches in the league, and he's always had good special teams. So, you know, it was hard to sleep that night, but you know what, this would be a great challenge for us. You know, we've done a good job the last 2 weeks, but to go up there and to play this team and to those conditions, it'd be a great challenge for us.
Sort of a just general philosophy question. I'm curious if you have any philosophy, Jim, on deferring or accepting, you know, the ball at the start of the game. That's a new rule this year, obviously.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. Last week we deferred because the quarterback wanted to defer, so I'm not really hung up on either way, one way or another. But I talked to Mark before the game. You know, he wanted to come out in the second half and have the ball, and that's why we deferred it.
Sure. Jim, how different is it going into being taken over a team in the middle of the year the way you have this year? I know you're one of a couple of guys who's doing it versus when you first got your first head coaching job in New Orleans, and how's the challenge different?
Well, honestly, it's a lot of challenge because I don't have enough time to change – the thing, everything that you want to change as a head coach. You know, you come in the middle of the season and take over a team that's already here, players are already in place, their values, everything that you do, the practice schedule, everything is already in place. So you don't want to differ too much, and obviously you're not going to change players. So you kind of roll with what you have and try to make it better. But like I said, I don't know if it'll be good enough for me to keep the job. I will say we'll practice harder, we'll play harder, we'll be better on the field, we'll be good enough. I don't know. Down there, we had a little bit more time to turn it around.